This afternoon, our reading is going to come from the second epistle to Timothy, the third chapter, and verses 1 through 5. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 5. Paul says, "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying its power. And from such people, turn away." That's a pretty ugly picture he paints there, isn't it? It's a pretty ugly picture. But you know, we look around in the society we live in today and look at the condition it's in, and very often we're caused to wonder whatever happened to decency and shame. We see the way people present themselves in public that is appalling. Absolutely appalling. No shame whatsoever. No decency. No sense of decency, even. And we wonder, how could it have gotten this bad? But you know, we are not the first generation to be living in perilous times. Not the first generation. We know Jesus and his apostles lived in pretty perilous times. No doubt about that. But the word perilous is an interesting word. And this word is used only twice in the New Testament. I'm always curious whenever I find a word that's only used once or twice in the New Testament. It has to have some special meaning. And the definition of it, when I look this thing up, and you have the resources probably in front of you to do this, is dangerous or by implication furious. It is hard to bear or painful. This same word is translated fierce in Matthew chapter 8 and verse 28. Same exact word. And that's the only other place where it occurs, by the way. The American Standard Version translates it grievous. And this being an old English word, you would expect that. You know, not really something we use so much today. And the New American Standard Version translates it difficult in 2 Timothy 3, where we just read. To sum it up in a simple way, it describes a terrible period of evil. Difficult, troublesome times for the people of God. That's really what it's saying right there. But looking at what Paul had to say to Timothy about the perilous times, I would like to consider what he said here in order for us to be able to truly identify the things that make up the perilous times, because indeed we live in them. No question about it. In verses 2 through 5, we find him talking about men being lovers of themselves and lovers of money and boastful and proud and blasphemers and disobedient to parents, unthankful and unholy. But notice the emphasis here on self. People who are lovers of themselves. What does that mean? Well, it means that these people are not concerned with God. And in fact, they're not even concerned with their fellow man. Why? Because they're lovers of themselves. Their attention and their focus is on themselves. And consequently, they live for whatever makes them happy. That's to them what life is all about. Whatever makes me happy. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter who I hurt. If it makes me happy, that's the direction I'm going. Of course, we know that secular humanism would tell them that that's the way they ought to be. When you boil down secular humanism, what have you got? Well, you got man being his own God. That's really what you have. And this focus on self, I believe, sets the stage or is the basis or foundation for the rest of what follows in this context, if you think about it. Look at each of these things. First, he talks about the subject of greed. A lover of money, the New King James Version says, or covetous, the King James Version says. What is this? This is a sign of selfishness. There's old self again. But greed, unfortunately, is behind a great deal of the filth that is publicized via internet and TV and movies. Greed. Why do they make R-rated movies? Because that's what sells. It's because people will stand in line and pay full price for a ticket to see it. That's why. In 1 Timothy chapter 6 and down at verse 10, in the first epistle to Timothy now, he says, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. And if you stop to think about it, you could probably sit there and make a list of the evil things that go on in this world and how they are connected to money. The drug business. Do you think these people who are selling illegal drugs are concerned about your health? No. They want money. They want money. And we could go down the line, on and on and on and on. The motivation is greed. But notice he says, for which, that is after the love of money, some have strayed from the faith in their greediness, and there's the connection now, greed, and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. The sorrows they pierced themselves through with may not be physical. In fact, they might live high on the hog, have better food to eat than you and I do. They may live in a nicer house than any of us can afford to live in. How then do they pierce themselves through with many sorrows? Because they are not in covenant relationship with God. That's why. And that's exactly what happens. But as we've said many times before, so say I now again, it is the love of money that brings forth these evils. It is not money itself. Not money itself. Money in and of itself has no capacity to be evil. It's a piece of paper. A very expensive piece of paper if the right numbers are on it. But a piece of paper nonetheless. That's all it is. But when you are greedy for it, when you covet it, then it's evil. It's evil, and of course brings forth all kinds of sin. But as we sum up some of these other things we read here, we also find him talking about arrogance being one of these signs of the perilous times. In verse 2 and also in verse 4, he talks about traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure. But you know, there are three terms used in all of this that all point to arrogance. Three terms. One of them is boasters. Boasters make more of themselves than they really are. You don't have to ask them how good they are, they'll tell you. And in fact, they'll keep telling you until they think you got you convinced. They're boasters. And then proud. The proud are the ones, by description, who look down their nose at others. I can't have anything to do with him. He's of a lower class than me. That's the proud. And then the haughty. The haughty is one who is inflated with pride. Inflated with pride. And we might call him a know-it-all. You can't tell this person anything because they already know it. That's haughty. But all three of these terms relate to the subject of arrogance, which is a sign of what? Perilous times. Perilous times. And then there is the category of being disrespectful, verses 2 and 3. There are six references in these verses to irreverence. Six references to irreverence. Of that, of course, is being a sign of the perilous times. The one of them is blasphemers in verse 2. Who's the blasphemer? We most often connect the blasphemer with those who speak against God, don't we? But that's not the only meaning of this word. A blasphemer speaks evil of others, insults others, and criticizes others. That's the definition of the word. These are blasphemers. And they are indeed part of this list of the irreverent that he's talking about under this category. The next one, and this one in some people's minds is kind of a strange thing to pop up in the list of the signs of the perilous times, and that is disobedient to parents. You say, well, that's kind of a strange place to find that there in verse 2. But if you stop to think about this, a child's relationship with their parents was a very important part of the law of Moses, wasn't it? In fact, a disobedient child who would not be in subjection to his father and mother was guilty of a capital offense. And by God's design, they were taken outside the city and stoned to death. Now, does that give you a little hint as to why this is in here? If you really stop to think about this, children who develop the practice of showing little or no respect to their parents by whining and talking back or just flat out disobeying them are contributing to perilous times. You know why? If they don't respect their parents, why should they respect a teacher? If they don't respect their parents, why should they respect a police officer? I didn't even know that man. If they don't respect their parents, why should they respect the property of others? I like that, and I'm going to take it. And you better not try to stop me. You see why times are perilous? And you know, God knew how these things build up and how they play out. And that's why he made the law the way he did under the law of Moses. Because a disrespectful child wasn't given the chance to become a criminal and an outcast of society because of their disrespect for their parents. That child was put to death. And like one old brother used to say, that kid wouldn't do that again. But that's how God looked at it, isn't it? And remember what the old scriptures are there for. They're there to teach us how God feels about things. Now, he hasn't given us any instruction to execute disobedient children today. But he tells us just exactly how he feels about it. And he hopes that we will respect that enough to do our part into keeping them obedient and reverent. Closely related to this is the idea of being unthankful or not grateful. We sometimes use the word ingrate to describe these people who have no appreciation for the things that others do for them. It doesn't matter how much is done for them. It doesn't matter how much is given to them. They are not grateful. In fact, they come to expect it. And they'll get mad at you if you stop giving it to them, instead of being grateful for it and thankful for it. Now here again, this follows right down the line of our interpersonal relations, but it also touches on our relationship to God, doesn't it? If you're not thankful when someone does something for you or helps you in some way, how are you going to feel towards God? You know, it's like John says, if you can't love your brother who you can see, how can you love God who you can't see? Okay, if you can't be thankful and grateful to your brother who you can see, what makes you think you're going to be able to be grateful to God who you can't see? That all makes sense, doesn't it? It all ties together. But in this category of irreverence or disrespect, if you will, he speaks in verse 3 of slanderers. A slanderer is a false accuser. And by expansion on this word, the slanderer seeks to destroy the reputation or good name of someone else. And it doesn't matter if what they're saying is true or not, if it seems to serve the purpose they're going to say it. We all have known people like that, haven't we? You may have had to deal with people like that in your life. But this is a sign. This is one of the signs of perilous times. Again, closely related to that are those in verse 3 that he calls despisers of good. They have no respect for what's good, and consequently, no respect for those who stand for good. That's another reason why filth and indecency is tolerated by so many. It's because that they have no real appreciation for moral and biblical principles. And it doesn't matter who stands for it. They're going to do it anyway. Doesn't matter to them. Because they despise good. The next one here in verse 3 is unloving. The King James Version says without natural affection. Without natural affection. Parents or children, either one, who are void of love for one another. Not only may they be void of love for one another, they may even hate each other. Animals treat their young better than some parents do. And baby animals are more responsive to their parents than some children are to theirs. And more attentive. That's natural affection. What we're talking about here is people who don't understand that. They are unloving. Now, you know, I could put a bunch of things under this category. For instance, abortion. Abortion is a sign of a lack of natural affection or unloving. This is a living being who you are potentially to bring into this world. But because you don't care about it, you don't love it, and it's just an inconvenience, you kill it. You absolutely kill it. And, you know, people who practice this do not want those who are taking advantage of their wares or whatever you want to call it, or their surgical procedures. They don't want those people to get too much information that might cause them to change their mind. In fact, they've gone to the high courts of our land to keep doctors and nurses or clinicians from showing the ultrasounds of the fetus that's to be aborted, to keep them from showing it to the person who wants to abort. Because the abortionists are afraid if they see that, they'll have too much conscience and won't do it. How far will these murderers go? I mean, where do they stop? Now, this has been overturned in several states, by the way. This move to do this has been overturned, and I hope it'll be overturned nationally. But that's how far they go. Why? They know. They know that if a person sees what they're about to terminate, they'll have second thoughts about it. Even the most hardened individual may have second thoughts. And they don't want to take that chance. They don't want to take that chance. Unloving. But, you know, euthanasia, physical, emotional, sexual abuse, all these things could fall into this category of unloving. Every one of them. And we could go on and on and on if we really tried hard enough. But we move on from the subject of disrespectful and irreverent to the subject of unrestrained. Without self-control, he says in verse 3. What do we mean by this? Well, we mean that they allow their drives and their passions to run wild and unrestricted, or unbridled, you might say. In other words, if it feels good, do it. And don't worry about whether it hurts somebody. You can sort that out later. But if it feels good, do it. Just go wild. That's what that's talking about. Unrestrained. But the unrestrained also fit in the category of the brutal. Because in their lack of restraint, they are, and definition now of brutal, untamed. Untamed. King James Version has here fierce. They're untamed. And consequently, the unrestrained are unholy. They engage in all forms of sin and have no sense of purity whatsoever. Be the last thing on their mind. And logically, under unrestrained, we would have to put headstrong. Headstrong. Literally, acting without thought. Acting without thought. All of these things fit in this category of unrestrained, and they are all part of what? Perilous times. But then there's another category here under the perilous times that we call can't be trusted. Can't be trusted. The first one that we put in this is in verse 3, unforgiving. Irreconcilable, New King James Version has for this word. What does it mean? It means you can't get along with him. No matter what you do, he will never honestly resolve differences. Unforgiving. Doesn't matter what you do. King James also uses for this word truth breakers. Their word is nothing. In other words, you can't trust them as far as you could throw them. A closely related to this in verse 4 is traitors. The traitor is the one who turns his back on others rather than standing with them. A sign of the perilous times. But then, what about those people who are described here as thrill seekers? Yeah, that's right. Lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. What are we talking about here? We're talking about people whose only thought is to seek sensual gratification. That is, gratifying the senses. They only care about fun. They only care about doing things they enjoy. And they do it with no regard whatsoever for God or for God's will. Lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. You know, this right here is the reason why people drink alcohol. This is why they use drugs. Why? Because they're seekers of pleasure. They love pleasure, not God. They watch filthy movies. They look at filthy videos online. They listen to filthy music, and I mean music that is filled with vulgar language and suggestive language. And it's not all found in the rap market either. It's found in other venues as well. Unfit. And who freely engage in sexual promiscuousness and sexual perversion. Why? Because they're lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. They're thrill seekers. They're out to try something different, try something new. And by the way, that's part of the reason why drug users go up the ladder. Because they start down here with something that would be considered to be a, more of a mild type of drug, like marijuana, for instance. And don't get me wrong, I don't condone marijuana, but it's a far cry from crack cocaine. But the thing about it is, they start using it, and it's really great. They get a real buzz out of it. It's a lot of fun. After a while, it's just like smoking a cigarette. It doesn't give them the buzz it used to give them. So they want something stronger. Now they have more intense forms of marijuana. They'll give them a little bit higher buzz. Well, that's good. That only lasts so long. You got to climb up the next rung of the ladder. And you keep going and going and going until you probably will kill yourself with an overdose, more than likely. That's how it works. But that's the thrill seeker. And it happens in every one of these areas we've been talking about this afternoon. But this next one, I think, is quite interesting to be included in here. They have an outward form of godliness. What? What's he talking about here? He says they have a form of godliness but deny its power. Who's he talking about? Well, I think we would conclude here that he's talking about those who pretend to be godly despite their indecency. They want the best of both. We sometimes call this the Sunday morning Christian. The only time that they're godly is on Sunday morning. But as soon as they can get out of this building, they go right back to their life that they live every other day of the week. Doing things that are indecent, using language that is disdained by God in every respect, doing things that are condemned by God. But don't worry. Come next Sunday morning, they'll come dragging in, maybe a little hungover, but they'll put on their godly face and come in. And don't laugh about this, because I've known of cases just like this. And I mean hungover. And somehow they think that if they get their little dose of godliness for an hour or two on Sunday morning, that makes everything okay. It doesn't make everything okay. This is the one who has an outward form of godliness but denies the power thereof. That's who that is. It is the one who we might simply say, why did I not put that on there? Is a hypocrite. And I wanted to put that on there. The Bible calls them hypocrites. See why I didn't get it. It's the bottom of the page, and I didn't catch it there when I made my chart. The Bible calls them hypocrites. And how are we supposed to deal with the hypocrite? What did he say? Verse 5, turn away from them. Turn away. Don't let them influence you to be just like them. You separate yourself from them. Because by you continuing to associate with them, you encourage them in their hypocrisy. Because they say, now listen to it carefully. Someone comes and says, hey, man, you live two lives. You come to church on Sunday and then you do this all week. Well, so-and-so hangs out with me and they don't ever say anything about it. They think it's all right. You see how that works? You see how that works? They want you to be their buddy. But they don't want you to say anything about it. And as long as you are their buddy, they think everything's okay. What did he say? Turn away from them. Do not give them any encouragement whatsoever. To the end, of course, that they will realize their condition and hopefully repent. No one can afford to participate in sin. We must rebuke those who are sinning. Period. I remind you what Paul said over here in 1 Corinthians 15:33. Evil company corrupts good habits. And remember what else he said? Don't deceive yourselves. Don't think that you can spend every waking moment hanging out with people who are foul-mouthed, vulgar, and who live evil lives and not have it affect you at all. You're just deceiving yourself. Don't have anything to do with it. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, what did Paul say? Verse 14 through 17. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Why? For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? You are the temple of the living God. As God said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. And I will be their God and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean and I will receive you. It's one of those passages so plain. It's like, what part of that don't you understand? What part do you not understand? Have no fellowship. Well, if you missed that one, let's go on one more down here to Ephesians 5 and verse 11. There it is very plainly. Have no fellowship. That carries with it all the force of a thou shalt not. Right there in plain words. have fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. It's not enough now just to not participate, but you need to expose them for what they are so others will be warned. In Galatians chapter 6 and down at verse 1, notice now to the brethren at Galatia, Paul says, if any man is overtaken in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Do we want to just cast aside the brother who sins? No! We want him to repent. We want him to repent. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to condone his sinful condition. It doesn't mean we're going to participate with him in things that are evil. No! But we are to try to restore him. And be careful that we don't allow ourselves to be drawn into it. That's what he says. James has somewhat to say about this in James chapter 5, verses 19 and 20. Brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he turns a sinner from the error of his way, will save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. Our goal is to turn them back. But we have to be careful and not allow ourselves to be drawn in with them. I know that in every generation, people have thought that it's absolutely the worst generation of mankind since the beginning of time. But don't think that our times are the worst that have ever been or ever will be. I might add, don't do that too. Don't think that. Every generation has thought the same thing. I found a quote here that is attributed to Socrates by Plato. That is, Plato actually quoted Socrates in 400 B.C. Put that in perspective. 400 B.C. All right? The children now love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for elders and love chatter in place of exercise. Children are now tyrants, not the servants of their households. They no longer rise when elders enter the room. They contradict their parents, chatter before company, gobble up dainties at the table, cross their legs, and tyrannize their teachers. That sounds like it could be written about right now. But this was 400 B.C. That's over 2,400 years ago. As I said, don't think it's the worst it's ever been. According to a book of facts by Isaac Asimov, and I don't know, you may have heard of him, I hadn't until I read this. There's an Assyrian clay tablet dates back to 2800 B.C. Think about that for a minute. We're getting back toward the flood here now. And it was unearthed and had the words on it, "Our earth is degenerate in these latter days. These are signs that the world is speedily coming to an end. Bribery and corruption are common." I thought we were in the worst generation ever. You see what I mean? This should bring to our memories the words of the preacher in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 9, when he said, "That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun." Now people, it's, oh yeah, but there's so many more ways that people can sin now. And oh, don't you think it's the worst gen? No, I don't. Let me tell you what, when you boil it all down, the devil may dress it up a little, The devil may change the terminology associated with it. In fact, the devil may tie a few ribbons on it. But when you sort it all out, the same sins that caused men to stumble and to fall since the beginning of time are still causing men to stumble and fall today. And they will continue to do so until time is no more. And that you can count on. You can count on it. Perilous times. Are we living in perilous times? Absolutely. But don't be deceived. Your children's children, if they are allowed to live on this earth, will live in perilous times too. Because the devil will be constantly working and trying his very best to draw people into his service. I hope this has been an interesting lesson for you, one that's been informative. There may be some of these things are things you've pondered before, or maybe not. Maybe it might be things you hadn't really considered in this light before. But I hope that this will be beneficial to each one of us to realize that our goal in life is to live godly, for our lives to be acceptable to God in every respect. And no matter what Satan throws at us, it doesn't change the fact that we seek to serve God. And we want to try to encourage everyone around us to do the same.